The Veterans Report is sponsored by James Cannon.
Welcome to the Veterans Report, the region's only show dedicated to those who have served our country. We have the latest news and information on resources available to veterans, including health care, education, employment tips, local volunteer organizations, and more. To those who have served, those who are serving, and to those who will, we salute you. And now, the host of the Veterans Report, Jim Cannon.
And welcome back to the Veterans Report. We appreciate you joining us today. So we're in military fashion. We're going to sort of flip the script here, and we're going to be a little versatile and do a 180. We're going to tee up our guest right out of the gate. So with us today is author and Navy vet Julia Mackey. How you doing, Julia?
Hi, great. I'm doing good. It's good to hear from you guys. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for coming on. Hey, so just a side note, I did some research. You're from northern Minnesota?
That's correct, yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. I just want to point out, this is just, and everybody else is going to be like, why are they talking about this? I grew up in Hibbing and Duluth as a kid.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. It's only about an hour away, Deer River,
yep.
The title of my book.
It's out by Grand Rapids, right?
Yep, we're right next to it. That's our nearest town.
Wow, that's crazy. Anyway, so northern Minnesota girl done good. You have a whole bunch of books, but that's really what we wanted to talk about. But just to get some street cred before we go into your titles here, you enlisted in the Navy in 1997, and you were sort of I don't think pioneer is too strong a word.
Oh, well, it was newer. The combat air crew rate had just been opened up to women about a year and a half prior to me going in. So it was definitely new to have women coming through. Some of the obstacles, pretty much everything I did, I was the only girl in my class until we got to A school. There's a couple more, so we were few and far between at that time.
Well, and what was your job? Because I think you're kind of underselling this.
I was an AW, Aviation Warfare Systems Operator, which meant I flew on P-3 Orions and hunted submarines. That was our primary mission, although we did a few other type, depending on where we were in the world at that time.
So you got to go all over the place, right?
Yeah, we did. We were stationed out of Iceland to track the submarine traffic coming down from, you know, Soviet Union, Russia, all that at that time. And then when Bosnia-Kosovo stuff was going on, we were over there doing overland mission flights, tracking intel gathering, that type of thing. And then we also did work down in the Caribbean, tracking drug runners as they were coming into the U.S. trying to cut them off. So,
wow.
Multi-mission.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
And then the patrol and reconnaissance. The great thing about the P-3 Orions is they can go out for long periods of time. So we would also do search and rescue type missions. We flew on JFK Jr. when his plane went down, looking for any remnants that we could find. Stuff like that.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. That's good stuff. Good fodder for future books, right?
Oh yes.
Now I wasn't a Navy guy. I started off as a Marine. So the P-3s are carrier based, right?
Nope. Actually,
oh, they're
too big to land on a carrier. So
oh, wow. Okay.
I never stepped foot on a ship the whole time I was in.
Oh, that's amazing! Because you were always over the ocean.
That's right. We were always over the ocean, but we were always based next to the shore or on the shoreline, I should say, but never on a ship.
Oh wow, that's incredible. Well, I appreciate your service, and thank you for that. That's, tough duty. So let's get into why you're here. Let's talk about some of the books. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have, what, a total of five?
That's right. I have four children's books and then my memoir, which is What They Don't Teach You in Deer River. Sorry.
No, I cut you off. What They Don't Teach You in Deer River was, that's basically your memoir, where the other books are sort of oriented toward children with a sort of like a military flavor to them.
Yep, absolutely. So they were kind of written with military children in mind. And I wrote my initial one to kind of talk about what I did in the military. That was called My Mom Hunts Submarines. And the whole theme throughout that one, I wanted to write a book for my kids in particular. I guess that's what started me off writing. Saying there isn't anything you can't do, basically, if you work hard enough. And then that kind of led to the second one, which is All Hands on Deck, Dad's Coming Home. So I wrote one for the dad's side of things, which is based on the shipboard side. But for any children that have parents that are deployed, that's kind of the resounding theme throughout that one. And then that led to Still My Dad, which is for any children that have parents that are wounded veterans coming home, and really touches on any type of disability, readapting to your new normal, because there's a lot of books out there to support the parents or the people that are going through it, but there wasn't a whole lot at the time to support the children that were in the family that are also changing their whole normal as well. So that's where that one came from. And then my final children's book was From the Sky, which I wrote based on all the amazing things that I saw while I was flying, how the world is such a different place. And what led me to write that was one day when we were flying, looking down, realizing that a rainbow was a complete circle. I could see the bottom of it across the ground. And I don't know why that had never dawned on me before. So I tell that to my kids, and they're like, what? It was a whole circle? So I wrote about all the different things, the northern lights, just how the world is such a different place from the sky.
Well, is there like a particular age range that these books target?
Yeah, they're more preschool. It's heavy themes, but it's written to a preschool level with a lot of pictures, which I did not illustrate because I'm not artistic at all. But the illustration department did. The From the Sky is a little bit older because the themes are a little bit older, more scientific, if you will. So I would say that would go from kindergarten to third grade.
Okay. Now, these are all drawings, right? They aren't like actual photographs in the books. They're illustrations.
Right. No, it's all drawings. And it was kind of funny when I submitted a lot of the pictures as a basis for the illustration department to go off of. I was like, oh, nope, her hair is out of regulation. I want to make it look realistic, you know, because anybody military will be like, oh, you can't wear a ponytail and flight suit like that. So we had fun with that.
Oh, that's great. So you, what was sort of the, and we'll get into the final one, the sort of adult book, but what was sort of the driver or the impetus for you to write that first book? I mean, you say that you wanted to explain to your kids what you did in the Navy, but why? I mean, what was sort of the obstacle to just verbalizing that?
Well, I've always enjoyed writing. I feel like I can express myself so much better in stories. So I have a collection of stories, and I never really expected it to go anywhere. But, you know, talking to a friend of a friend, they're like, hey, just submit it, see what happens. And I ended up doing it, and they said, oh, yeah, we'd love to publish this. We think that there's a need for stories like this. And so they did. So I go around in a lot of the schools and talk about the books or read the books, and a lot of them are like, okay, talk to the kids about the whole writing process, and we do all that for the teachers. But also I'm like, hey, if I can write this book, anybody can write a book, you know. It's I hope it encourages and motivates. Anybody can write. So I've
noticed that a lot of vets, not many women, but a lot of vets are sort of doing that. They're winnowing this down and parsing it out to explain to kids different aspects. And you've covered a lot of bases with your books. I mean, some people just focus on one sort of aspect of it, but you've hit a couple of different targets on here.
Right, and each one kind of led to another. And when I say that, so my sister and brother-in-law were on the ship that led to my second one. So that inspired me with that one. I wrote about the USS Dennis. That was the shipboard. And so it kind of triggers the thoughts. And then after I'd written that one, the second one, or the third one, that's Still My Dad, I actually served with some friends who, after I had gotten out, they went on and went over to Iraq and were wounded. And they said something about, you should write about the service dogs and stuff, because they were taking service dogs. They started an organization, Shepherds for Lost Sheep, and they were rescuing dogs from the shelters and training them themselves. They started their own nonprofit, and I thought, wow, what a great idea. There needs to be more stories like this. And so being that it is such a heavy subject for children, I try to focus it more on the service dog and what to do if you see a service dog in the street. You know, you want to ask permission before you run up to it and pet it, you know, because they're working, and just exploring all that theme. So really one just kind of jumped from the other, I guess, as inspiration sometimes does, perhaps.
Oh, no, I get it. I absolutely get it. But that's it's interesting because I've talked to some other authors, and everybody has sort of a different, approach or a pull. But I've heard that theme over and over, is that one thing led to another to another. And so you sort of build on this foundation. So
yeah.
No, it's interesting for a non-author to hear that process.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and everybody has a story. And I tell that to everybody who they're like, oh, you know, I've always thought about writing. And I'm like, write then. If it's therapeutic to so many different people, and I know especially veterans, some of the stuff that they've gone through, which is what Tactical 16 has really honed in on and tried to help, being a veteran-owned publishing company that helps serve other veterans and tell their stories. They're my amazing publishing company, so can't say enough good things about them.
Listen to you getting the plug in.
Now
that's good.
I mean it sincerely, though.
No, I I'm on board with that. What a great bunch of people, and they do a fantastic job of sort of opening that door for vets. Because you're right, everybody does have a story to tell, and I think a lot of people are, I don't want to say scared, but they're apprehensive to put pen to paper.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, because you're opening that big can of worms, and you don't know what can come out, and a lot of people just kind of want to lock that away. As met many people that have gone through PTSD and friends, and you know, like I said, everybody has their own story, and it's so scary to open that up, and it's so hard, and you relive it when you retell it. But in doing so, that's how you heal as well, and you're helping others heal, and so it's this perfect circle once you can get to that point. And so that's what they're doing with Tactical 16. So really happy to be a part of it.
Well, it's a good bunch of people, and I've talked to a bunch of the different the authors there, and it's just amazing. But now, speaking of reliving, I'm going to steal one of your words here. Let's get into your 2015 book, What They Don't Teach You in Deer River. What is the basis of that book?
So that book just started with a collection of random stories. Like I said, I enjoy writing, and some of it I just started writing down because I didn't want to forget the time I was in France or the time I was in Iceland and I walked out in front of the radar or I fell down the ladder. I'm notorious for doing clumsy, stupid things, airhead things. And so these have all evolved into like hilarious stories. And so I just wanted to write them all down to capture them someday. I enjoy telling stories. And I started putting them together sequentially and realized I kind of had a whole book here, 300 plus pages. So it was great to relive, and I felt by telling these stories I would put honor to a lot of the great leaders that I had. I was never in combat, thankfully. I was in Kosovo, like I said, flying over, stuff like that, and we were in some situations, but nothing ever that I had to, you know, write some intense stories like that. But I kind of based it on a lot of the humorous things, the intense things that came out of, you know, boot camp and going through SEER school, and just the experience alone, like I had said before, being a female in a rate that had just been opened up to men. There were a lot of stories that had just evolved out of that. Flying on airplanes, they're definitely not equipped for women to fly on. We have stand-up urinals on there, and we're flying for 12 hours. So you can imagine that there's a lot of creativity that comes out of that. So it's a whole other world that I don't think that most of the public would quite get, and I kind of wanted to give them a little glimpse of that, I guess.
So, I mean, are the stories that you outline in the book, are they... I mean, clearly the military folks are probably going to get a chuckle out of them, whereas a lot of civilians might get a really pained look on their face.
Yeah, a lot of them said that it was quite enlightening. I think almost a lot of my non-military civilian friends were almost more entertained by it because they they just couldn't comprehend a lot of it. They thought that that was insane, some of it. But then a lot of the military people could relate to a lot of it too, so they were entertained by it as well.
So now let me parse this out and really get in the weeds here. The title of the book, "What They Don't Teach You in Deer River," where did that come from? How did you create that?
So Deer River is the town that I grew up in. Deer River, northern Minnesota, practically Canada. Population 900. I joined the military 2 weeks after I graduated high school, and so I'm like fresh off the farm, have no idea. Even riding down to MEPS in a bus, that was the first time I'd ever ridden in a Greyhound type bus before, and so we're a little bit sheltered up there, and it was a wonderful place to grow up. I couldn't speak highly enough of this little town, you know, small town USA anywhere, really, where everybody knows everybody and helps you. But I really didn't have a lot of the street smarts. I don't know if I still might not. We had a worry, and I believe I wrote about this, that a bear would, you know, be more likely to attack us walking down the street than some stranger. So going out into the Navy was kind of a shocking experience, you might say, in itself, going out into the world. And all the stuff that, like, you know, first time in a foreign country that I was doing, I really didn't know any different or know better, and all the differences. So that's where it is, what they don't teach you in Deer River, about the big world. But the whole premises behind it and behind the title and how it's all summed up together is all the big stuff in life, all the morals, the deep connections, the taking care of your fellow man is all, that's what they do teach you in Deer River. So not to give away the ending.
Yeah, don't do that. We want people to buy the book. We want them to buy multiple copies of the book and tear through it. So a side question, and this has nothing to do with your books, but it does have to do with your military service. There are a lot, I mean, obviously the hot topic for the last probably year and a half, 2 years, with respect to the military, has been women. You know, gender integration, full gender integration in terms of opening up every job, including combat roles, combat arms, to women.
Right.
When you were in, you might have a completely different take on it, because this was a couple years ago, and again, you were sort of a pioneer, so maybe you were focused on the horizon instead of the rearview mirror. But did you catch any grief? I don't know a tactful way to put it, from people in the Navy when you were doing this?
So most of the people that I was surrounded by, the guys that were my age, they were raised by, you know, women of the 70s that were, you know, feminists, and it wasn't that unusual for them. The people that did give you grief and that didn't really want you there were the older generation, that you're coming in, you're changing your Navy. You know, all of a sudden they can't just say whatever they want or do whatever they want or walk around, however, you know, that kind of thing. However, I definitely learned along the lines at some point. You know, I wanted to come in there like, yeah, I can do anything, da-da-da. But I realized quickly that you catch more bees with honey, and like coming in there like, I'm going to change this. I mean, that's not going to work. You need to, respect is earned, not just demanded. And as far as equality goes, I think that anybody can do anything, but you have to be able to do it too, if that makes sense. My job was to launch a 200-pound life raft in an emergency. And if I wasn't capable of launching that 200-pound life raft, well, I shouldn't be in that job. And that goes with combat nowadays. Like, if you can't do the same standards as a man that's doing that job. And that goes for men. Like, if they're not up to the standards as well, they shouldn't be doing a combat job. So I do think it should be open to whomever, but you have to be capable of doing the job, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And I respect it. And I wanted to get your take on it as somebody who did a traditionally just a male job, but sort of, you know, seamlessly jumped into that thing and did it. And I, you know, your opinion means something here. So I appreciate hearing that from you.
Yeah.
Now, when you, and I hate to dwell on this, but I'm going to, because it's my show. So did you pick your job? Did you pick your MOS, or was it sort of hung on you?
Well, I had a little bit of choice, but I knew I wanted to go aviation. I wanted to fly, and I wrote about that a little bit. Something about aviation just spoke to me ever since I was a kid. I knew I wanted to fly, but I didn't know exactly how or what or where or anything like that. So when I spoke to different recruiters, the Navy one was the one that enticed me. And I went in initially with aircrew as my contract, but I didn't have a specific job in there. They're like, oh, you pick that when you go to boot camp, you know, which now I tell everybody, make sure you have it on your contract, whatever you want to do, make sure you have it on there. If anybody's joined the military, that contract is your lifeline, so get exactly what you want. But when I got to boot camp, they said, oh, we just have the two options for AD or AW. And I was like, okay, what's that? AD was a mechanic, or is a mechanic, on the aircraft. And I'm like, I'm not the least bit mechanically inclined. And so AW, they're like, oh, you fly on the plane and you work with some computers. And it was a very vague description. So I just kind of, all right, I'm going to try this. I also initially went in, I wanted to be a rescue swimmer because growing up with 10,000 lakes in northern Minnesota, I was a very strong swimmer that I felt like was one of my more stronger points. But the rescue swimmer school, when I got to Pensacola, Florida, all the female billets were full. They still go by male and female billets, so it's kind of crazy. But so it ended up working out, though, in the end, I feel like. You know, rescue swimmer, I would have been on a ship, and at that point, it would have led to a completely different path. And I do believe, you know, everything happens for a reason. And I ended up where I was ultimately supposed to be. You know, met my husband then, and everything down the line kind of trickled that way. So, you know, sometimes it's not exactly what you envision, but it all worked out just the way it should have and just right, you know?
Well, thankfully, otherwise we wouldn't be talking. So,
right.
Very cool. So what year did you get out of the Navy?
I got out in 02, so I did 5 years of my 5-year tour, and then I got out, had a family, well, because I had met my husband while I was in, and we wanted, I didn't ever intend to stay in at that point, but I'll tell you what, once I got out, I sure missed it, but we invaded Iraq in 03, you know, a couple months later, really. But I had had a baby at that point, and I couldn't leave my kids, you know. They needed me at home. So had a family and everything. And just last summer, in my unconventional story, I ended up going back in because I missed flying. So now I'm back in the Air Force this time, the Air National Guard. Now that my kids are older, they're in high school, you know, getting close to picking their career paths and stuff, I'm back in the service, which is weird, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, crazy, right? Because it never happens. as we shared via email.
Right.
Yeah, so it happens, though. So, I mean, do your kids look at you like, man, mom's crazy. What is she doing?
No, not really. We had, you know, a big family meeting about it before we did. And I said, you know, I'm going to be drilling. Might miss a couple soccer games here and there. Are you going to be okay with it? We're like, yeah. Dad'll be here, or, you know, or he travels with his work, and then like Dad travels all the time. I don't know, a little bit. It's different because I don't mean to pull that card, but I don't think you would think much of it if it was a guy that went back in, but a mom with kids. I don't know. You kind of have the working mom guilt already as it is, and then on top of that, you know, throw in the military. But they're at stages in their life where they're figuring out what they want to do, and I hope if anything, I can inspire them to say, you know what, you can do anything, and this is proof of it. Like, why not? If you want to try this, try it.
But you're not, I mean, you're not pushing them into the military.
No, definitely not. I know my oldest, she has no interest in it. I'm encouraging them. I'm saying, you know, look at what it's done for me and your father, who is in as well, and all the great benefits, all the travel. You know, I had such a great experience. And it's not all roses, don't get me wrong. I mean, I've buffed many decks and cleaned many toilets and dumped many pissers and all kinds of stuff. But it's been great overall. And um, I I think my son, I think it'd be perfect for him. I hope he goes there. So he needs a little direction and somebody to kind of lead him in that way, which I feel like the military is great for doing that.
I can't believe you admitted to missing all of that. The mopping and the cleaning.
I know. It's crazy. I miss flying more than anything. And so I'm excited to get back up in the air. That's my goal.
Oh, so you still, I mean, you get time up in the planes, right?
Not yet. Ah. I'm just getting recalled back into there, but that is my ultimate goal.
Oh, that's cool. Did you keep your rank?
I did, yeah, and I didn't have to go through boot camp again or anything. I don't think I could have handled that as an old lady now.
Oh, that's an interesting story, though.
I know, that'll be part two, right?
Are you going to write a follow-up?
I definitely, yes. I've already been writing down some stories, for sure. Because it's such a different experience this time, let me tell you. Like, I did have to go through MEPS again because it's been 15 years and I've had 3 babies. Just to make sure your health is still good and everything. And I'm sitting there as a 39-year-old woman with these 18-year-old girls going through, and I'm like, I could be your mother. This is so weird. but it was great, though, too, because they're asking me all these stories. And I mean, one in particular, this girl's like talking about how to Valsalva, like, clear her ears. And she's like, I heard you have to lean over and you press down like you're having a bowel movement. I'm like, no, don't do that. That's not right at all. So just ridiculous things like that. But it's so different now, but it's really good too.
Well,
it's good and bad, everything.
It's weird though, because you go in as an adult, right? With this completely different
That's
life perspective.
Part. I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, you have a completely different life perspective.
So different, yeah. You're just kind of, you know that there's going to be BS surrounding a lot of stuff, and you're just like, oh, here we go. This is just part of it.
But it's funny, because once you raise kids and you go back in as somebody who has raised kids and raised teenagers, you recognize the games, whereas,
oh, yeah.
You know, like as a senior NCO, you just sort of roll your eyes with a lot of it and go, okay, I'm not going to chew him out for this because he's 19 and 19-year-olds do dumb stuff.
Yeah, that's so much of the different perspective. And you're a lot more patient. You're like, you know, some days I'm just getting a paycheck. Like, I'll still get paid for this, even though this day sucks. But other days you're like, man, this is awesome. Here I am driving on the flight line, you know, next to these multi-billion-dollar aircraft, and this is pretty cool. You know, here I'm doing it now at in D.C., the National Guards, and it's like the heart of the country. You know, this is where it all happens, and it's exciting to be a part of.
Oh, that's awesome. Good for you for doing that.
Thanks.
So we got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Let's get back to your books. Where are they available? Where can people get them? Are they available online, through Amazon?
Yep. So they're on Amazon. Also, my website, which I am under construction for the next couple of days. We've been revamping it and putting a shopping cart on there so you can get it directly, and they'll be signed by the author there. So my website is juliamackey.com. It's juliamackey.com. So check that out in a couple of days. And if you want a signed book, I'll be happy to send some to you. Anybody.
Anybody.
Anybody, not just you.
Oh, that's awesome. So what are these priced retail?
The What They Don't Teach You, you can get a paper for $13 and a hardcover for $25. And the hardcovers are very beautiful, if I do say so myself. And the children's books are around like $8 to $10. So,
okay, good. And again, that website was juliamackey.com.
Yes.
Awesome.
And Tactical 16, they'll have a link from there too. So
I was going to say one more plug for Tactical 16.
Yeah, you got to get that out there.
Yep.
Great company.
Make them happy.
Lot of good veteran stories there. So.
No, that's great. Well, hey, Julia, really appreciate you taking some time to talk today, getting your story and your background a lot cooler than it looks just in writing. It was good to hear from you. And
thank you. I appreciate you having me. It was wonderful to talk to you.
Absolutely. And good luck with the books, and we hope that you come back on if you write a couple more.
Yeah, I will. Thank you so much.
All right, Julia.
All right, take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
That was Navy veteran and author Julia Mackey. You can find her books on juliamackey.com or on the tactical16.com website. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this. If you want to keep up with the latest in veteran news away from the radio, stop by our website at www.theveteransreport.com. There you'll find news headlines, along with links to media outlets around the world. You can also find links to every state's Veteran Services Office. And for you film buffs, there's even a link to a war movie database. We appreciate you stopping by the Facebook page at facebook.com/theveteransreport. There, like the website, you'll find the latest news and information related to veterans. For you high-speed individuals who want to limit yourself to 140 characters, stop by our Twitter account. It's a great way to find information on veteran organizations throughout the country and what they're up to. You can tweet us by using @TheVetsReport. If you'd like to email the show directly, please send us your input, comments, or suggestions to editor@TheVeteransReport.com. Thanks again for checking out our pages. Thanks for listening, and thank you for supporting our veterans community. And we're back on the Veterans Report. Thanks again for tuning in here on 620 AM KHB. If you're using the TuneIn app, you can look up 620 AM on that. Or you can go to the khbradio.com website and click the Listen Live link. Keep in mind, all of the news we're about to cover, including the poll question, is on both the Facebook page, theveteransreport.com Facebook page, and theveteransreport.com website. If you haven't stopped by, do it. It's good stuff. You can also sign up for the Twitter account, which is pretty active. And that is also in large part thanks to our partners at WTF Nation Radio. So a big shout out to those folks. They're doing the do, and they're helping us along, and we're helping them along, and it's symbiotic. And that's how it should be with all veterans. So if you have a veteran business out there, if you're a veteran-owned business, veteran entrepreneur, help out your fellow vets. They can't do it without you. So news this week. So we're still talking about the whole school shooting thing, right? And it morphed from the Florida school shooting. It morphed from sort of a free-for-all debate to people essentially choosing sides on this thing. I think as we're here today, most of it has calmed down, right? President Trump, to his credit, again, to whatever side of the fence you fall on, he took the time to listen. He's held a couple of meetings, both with the high school kids and the families, as well as legislators on both sides of the aisle. His most recent meeting, I will say from a personal standpoint, kind of gave me pause when he mentioned essentially doing away with due process. I kind of take the amendments, especially the Fourth Amendment, kind of seriously. So hopefully he misspoke, but that kind of nerved me out. But all that aside, opinion aside, you know, he's made efforts, legislators are making efforts, so things have calmed down a little bit, right? There's a little less fire and a lot more smoke right now. But I found a story the other day, and I think it was the president who said, you know, I would have run in or something like that during the shooting. Other people have said that online, right? These keyboard commandos, I would have done this and I would have done that and I would have been Rambo. Okay, some of you might have, probably not, but there might be the one in 100,000 that does it. So I found a story in Task and Purpose. Medal of Honor recipient Clint Romache. People should stop armchair quarterbacking what they do in a school shooting. Medal of Honor recipient Clint Romache says people need to stop armchair quarterbacking what they would do during a school shooting. In an appearance on CNN's The Lead, he said all those would-be heroes should, quote, stop talking about it, end quote, if they've never been in a situation like that. You might remember that this Army sergeant was involved in the attack on Combat Outpost Keating, Cop Keating, Kamdesh, Afghanistan, in October of 2009. He was a staff sergeant at the time. He was a section leader assigned to Bravo Troop 361 Cav, 4th Brigade Combat Team, 4th Infantry Division. And for his actions that day, he received the Medal of Honor. So and I kind of half jokingly threw this up on the Facebook page right before the show that said, well, I guess that kind of ends the whole debate, doesn't it? If you have a Medal of Honor recipient who really went through the meat grinder, you know, I mean, if you read his medal citation, it's like something out of Hollywood. I mean, he was going through bullets. He was walking through fire that was coming down and pulling people back, wounded guys, and setting up defenses and doing all the right things, right? But so if anybody knows what they would do in a situation where bullets were flying, this guy would. So he kind of shut it down. So good for him. That story's online as well. So if you go on there, there's a link to the whole video. What's his name? Jake Tapper. It's funny, though. It's funny. He says, you know, but to hear someone say it in hindsight, armchair quarterbacking, yeah, I would have run in there and I would have done this, done that, and the other. Well, until you do it, you know, stop talking about it. That's his quote. You know, stop talking about it. Fantastic. And he's right. As we all stand here today, even some of you, you know, you hard-charging grunts out there who've been through it, maybe you've been through similar things as this guy, but you are few and far between. How many times have the rest of us been at a bar and, man, we've heard all the war stories, right, about the heroics? Very few guys out there, very few, know what it means to go through a situation like that and how they would react, because they've done it, right? That's how they know what they would do. They've been there and done it. So choose your arguments wisely. I guess that's the lesson. Another story that popped up. And this stuff, this has been going on for years, and you'd think at this point people would have enough of a clue to not try to walk this tightrope. But every now and then, you got to smack somebody down. State Attorney General says Washington landlords illegally refused to rent to veterans. At least 10 property management companies across Washington state have illegally refused to rent to military veterans who use federal housing vouchers, according to the Washington State Attorney General's office. Investigators in the office's civil rights unit tested about 50 landlords across the state by attempting to apply for housing using Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing vouchers. Those vouchers serve veterans who need case management and have mental illness, substance abuse, or physical disability. And the office found 10 property management companies with blanket policies refusing those vouchers. And that, my friends, is illegal. So the Washington State Attorney General's office went after them and reminded them that there are laws against that. Because the vouchers serve veterans with disabilities, and state law prohibits housing discrimination based on military status or disability. So now, development in that, after the AG went after them, 8 of the 10 companies signed agreements with the AG's office, basically trying to work it out, promising to end their policies refusing the vouchers, adopt anti-discrimination policies, and train their employees in those policies. And they will also, each one of those 8 is going to pay a fine between $5,000 and $6,500. And they list them in the article. It means nothing to me because I don't live in Washington State. However, if you live in Washington or you're headed out that way, if you're moving there, you might want to look into this. But again, the stuff is in black and white. It's written down. I don't know. I guess an argument could be made if I were their attorney, and I'm not an attorney. I don't even play one on TV, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express once. So that gives me total backing to act as a legal expert. But if I were their counsel, I could see how it might be nuanced and say, well, it says, you know, it specifies veteran status and disability. It doesn't specify the voucher. I don't know. But even that's kind of a weak argument. despite here's the end of the story. Despite laws against discrimination, local and state authorities have found discriminatory practices among landlords. The Seattle Office for Civil Rights regularly tests rental properties and has found illegal discrimination based on race, sexual orientation, and other factors. Last year, oh, here's a beautiful one. Last year, the state AG cracked down on landlords who advertised "No Felons Allowed," saying those policies have a disproportionate effect on black renters. Oh, man. I don't, maybe the moral of the story is don't go into property management. I don't know. There's another story about, oh, there was one in the local paper, the Post-Gazette here, about service dogs, which I thought was kind of cool. We just had Canines for Warriors on a couple weeks ago, and that's why I thought this was kind of neat, and I wanted to highlight this one. There was a study done at Purdue University College of Veterinary Medicine. Veterans teamed with service dogs have lower levels of depression and anxiety and higher levels of life satisfaction, according to the study. The pilot research project indicates that veterans with service dogs, quote, had significantly lower levels of post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms than vets who did not have dogs, said psychologist Maggie O'Hare, who led the study. But that, I mean, that shouldn't be a surprise, right? I mean, I think we've, again, this is anecdotal and non-expert based, but I'm pretty sure we all realize that dogs do kind of create or contribute, at least contribute to sort of an upswing in one's mood, emotional state. And that's not just vets, that's everybody, right? I mean, as a matter of fact, I think studies have been done to show that, just in the regular population. So this shouldn't be a, I'm not sure this is groundbreaking or earth-shattering, but it is kind of cool to see it validated. Huh. The story goes on to say every organization that trains these dogs has a long waiting list. The cost, oh, this is crazy. The cost of a dog and its training can be more than $22,000. And no government agency pays for any of that. And I do remember Canines for Warriors saying that this is, it's a tough one because you have to go out and basically find funding for all this. That's why these organizations are constantly on like the fundraising hamster wheel, because right now the government won't pay for it. Here's another. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has cited a lack of scientific research supporting service dogs for veterans with PTSD, said Stephen Feldman, executive director of Purdue's Human-Animal Bond Research Institute. He says, quote, I hope the promising results from this study will prompt a renewed focus on the benefits that service dogs provide. Huh. So we all kind of know this already, and the VA is saying, there's no evidence. You know, I try. I really try to back the VA. I do. Because I think overall, 98-97% of it and the people and the processes and the facilities, I think it's good. I think it's positive and helpful. It's that, you know, the squeaky wheel thing, right? Just working in reverse. It's that 3% that screws it up for everybody. You know, and they... I think at some point I will break free of my bonds from the corporate world, and maybe I'll pitch to the VA that they need communication management. Maybe I'll be their go-to, because they don't do so hot. They don't do so well when they're putting out statements. It's like they don't think it through. They just, boom, here, some random administrator can just, you know, put something out there, issue it, email it. Breaks my heart. Breaks my heart, Frito. Breaks my heart. But anyway, so a good story about dogs for vets. Oh, and here's the We covered this. This is ongoing. This is ongoing, and it will not stop. So Eric Greitens, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I really don't care if I'm pronouncing it correctly because I'll never meet him. Missouri Governor Eric Greitens, right? Former Navy SEAL. That's the link to the show, everybody, right? Veteran. Missouri Governor Eric Greitens, he's been in trouble for, probably 2 months now, 2.5 months. In 2015, he had an affair with his hairdresser. And I covered this last week, and I went off the rails a little bit. He campaigned on being a family guy, right? Traditional family values, being a good guy. Aw, shucks, my wife and two beautiful kids, which is cool. You campaign on that. But then he turned around, and right before, now this was, here's where it gets tight. This happened before the campaign. He had an affair with his hairdresser. Actually, that kind of makes it worse, doesn't it? He did that and then went out and campaigned on family values. Anyway, that aside, 2015, he had an affair. 2016, I think it was 2016, he took office. Is that 2016? 2016, took office as governor. So anyway, that wasn't bad enough. He actually took pictures of this woman in compromising positions while they were doing their thing. When she threatened to reveal the affair, this is how everybody found out about it. She was going to go to the press with the affair because it wasn't a lengthy thing. It was short-lived. He basically said, I have these pictures of you, so if you go to the press, I'm going to release the pictures. And they were, you know, rather risque. And so long story short, she ends up contacting the AG. The AG looks into it. Basically, they charged him with, I forget what the charge was. I had it in last week's story. I think it was like, you know, invasion of privacy and something that it doesn't quite rise to the level of blackmail or extortion, but it's pretty close. But they were going to go after him, right? They were going to pursue this. And he's basically saying, oh, you know, this happened before I was a government official, so it shouldn't have any bearing on my office. Okay. All right, well, you still broke the law. I mean, there are laws against the whole revenge porn thing. But, so here's the new twist, right? Here's the new wrinkle. And clearly the guy's going to fight. And I get it. I mean, typical SEAL, right? Big ego. But, kidding aside, if he thinks he has a case, if he honestly believes that this is purely political and there's no criminal basis for it, then I'm a big fan of fighting, right? I'm a big fan of fighting the good fight. But, you know, my vast legal experience would lead me to counsel this guy and say, you might want to think this one through, buddy. You know, take a long weekend in the mountains by yourself, do some hiking, do some thinking, and then maybe really, really consider if you want to do it this way. But the new wrinkle here, and I'll get to the point because I'm belaboring this, is the Attorney General has now opened an inquiry into Greitens' charity. Missouri Governor Eric Greitens used an email address for a veterans charity he founded to arrange political meetings as he prepared to launch his first bid for public office, despite a federal ban on nonprofits participating in political campaigns, according to records obtained by the Associated Press. Greitens, who was on the board of directors of The Mission Continues at the time, sent meeting invitations from the charity's email address to three political consultants. He asked them to join him for a series of meetings over 2 days in January 2015 with more than a dozen state lawmakers, a lobbyist, and an anti-abortion activist, according to copies of the emails obtained by the AP. The emails indicate the meetings were hosted at the Jefferson City offices of two Republican consulting firms, less than a month before Greitens officially created a candidate exploratory committee. Participants at the meeting told the AP the topic of discussion was Greitens' impending candidacy. Federal tax law prohibits 501c3 charities, such as The Mission Continues, from participating in any political campaign on behalf of a candidate for public office, with penalties ranging up to the loss of their tax-exempt status. However, the legal consequences for individual charity directors are less clear. So the Attorney General's office, one of their spokespeople, confirmed that they've opened an inquiry into the charitable activities of the Mission Continues, which is a shame because we had them on the show a couple of months back. Good group. I mean, incredible. I mean, as the name implies, the Mission Continues. Incredible mission for this organization. So let me expound on that a little bit with some editorial. He needs to do the right thing. I know 2.5 minutes ago I said fight the good fight. If you are endangering a nonprofit organization that has a positive mission and positive net result for the veterans community, if you are going to negatively impact that solely by your actions, and you can mitigate that by resigning your job, then do it. Do it. Just, I got it. You won. You were the governor. Cool story. Goes on the resume. It's time for you to go. This is ridiculous. Why would you? Just end the circus, man. Just end it. That should have been the poll question this week. But I'm not sure enough people know about this. So maybe we'll keep highlighting this one. It is a saga, and it is kind of, on the one hand, it's kind of entertaining to step back and watch, you know, political soap operas like this, because they're all over the country. They're everywhere. But again, on the other hand, to negatively impact a charitable organization with such a selfless purpose, time for you to go, buddy. Just move on, man. You got a good enough background, you can go to work as a contractor somewhere. So something else. The Clint Romachet armchair quarterbacking piece. He has another one out, and this one is a video. All I could find was video on this one. Yeah. Medal of Honor recipient lobbies to stop overprescribing of pills to vets. And I watched it. I'll see if I can get it. Yeah, I'll see if we can get it posted on the website or on the Facebook page. It's an interesting interview. You know, did I say Vince Romachet? I should have said Clint. Sorry. Made up the wrong name. I'm just making up names now. But interesting interview, and they walk him through it, and they basically say, you know, what do you think of the use of prescriptions for vets? And very articulate and very well thought out. So I encourage you to watch it. I'm not going to spoil it for you. That, and I don't have a transcript, so I couldn't spoil it for you anyway. So next news story, and then this will lead right into the poll for this week. You know what? Yes. So there's a story, quick story. DHS offers to drop deportation case against wife of 7th Special Forces Group vet. The Department of Homeland Security has offered to drop the proceedings that could have led to the deportation of a U.S. Army 7th Special Forces Group veteran's wife, the family's attorney announced late Thursday. The case came to light in a Military Times exclusive that reported how retired Sergeant First Class Bob Crawford, an Army Ranger who spent the latter part of his career with 7th Special Forces Group conducting counter-narcotics missions in Latin America, was fighting to keep his wife, Elia, from being deported. So the short end of it is, they moved back to the States, and Elia came to the country illegally in 1999. As a military spouse, she's eligible for a provision known as parole in place that would allow her to seek legal status in the U.S. So the DHS was actually pursuing this whole case. They were working toward deporting her. And then DHS talked to the family attorney, who then talked to, I think it was the Pentagon. And then, of course, Defense Secretary Mattis stepped in and said that he's previously said that service members and vets would be protected from deportation due to an agreement he came to with DHS. But they haven't offered any details, and they're not clear if the agreement would extend to family members. Now, in all the stories I've read about this, there was no explanation as to why, if she's been here since 1999, she didn't bother seeking citizenship in the 18 years she's been here. Be that as it may, there was an agreement worked out with DHS. And that will lead to the new poll question, but let's cover last week's poll. Last week's poll question was related directly to Florida Governor Rick Scott. He had announced plans to raise the age for purchasing a firearm in Florida to 21, but provide exceptions for the military and law enforcement. And he also proposed new gun control measures for those accused of stalking or domestic violence. Now, I will say I did get some feedback on this that perhaps the question was confusing. Some people agreed with the raising the age limit. Let me back that up. Some people disagreed with raising the age limit, but agreed that anybody with any kind of stalking or domestic violence in their background should be outright prohibited. Some people agreed with both. So the question perhaps wasn't as clear as it could have been, but it was, do you support adding limitations similar to those proposed by Florida Governor Rick Scott to firearms purchases, meaning everywhere? 20% said yes, 80% said no. And again, I think that had more to do with the age, the raising of the age. I don't think anybody in their right mind, well, I don't know. Let me back that up. The domestic violence thing is certainly a serious enough issue that a firearm prohibition makes sense. So let me tear through this. Based on the story about the 7th Special Forces Group sergeant whose wife faced deportation, and now she's got sort of a special agreement, right, through DHS. So jump on the Facebook page, take this week's poll, and it is: do you agree with exceptions being made with respect to immigration laws for service members, veterans, and their family members? It's a simple yes or no. Do you agree with it or don't you? So jump on Facebook, take a look at that, and let us know. Be sure you pass it around to friends and colleagues. Again, big thanks goes out to our guest today, Julia Mackey, Navy vet and author, and part of the Tactical 16 publishing family, a great bunch of folks with some really incredible stories. And I expect to, and if Eric's listening, I expect to see some screenplays out of that place soon. But again, Julia, thank you, and thank you all for listening. And until next time, I'm your host, Jim Cannon.
You've been listening to The Veterans Report. Let others know about the show. You can find us online at theveteransreport.com. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to editor@theveteransreport.com. Join us again at the same time for up-to-date veterans news and information. The Veterans Report. Thank you for your service, and carry on.
The Veterans Report has been sponsored by James Cannon.